Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA. It is Thursday evening, trade deadline day. Joining me from Bristol, Connecticut, where he... Did you sleep, Tim Bontemps? What was your sleep situation?
I got about 90 minutes, 2 hours sleep.
Okay. I'm in LA. I got about 3 hours from about 12:30 to about 3:45, and I was on the air for the first time at 4:45 a.m. Pacific time. Joining me from down the street here in LA before he flies to Sacramento tonight to continue on the road with the Mavericks and the Kyrie Irving, Luka Doncic show is Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Hopefully you boys can turn on some sympathetic violin music and go to sleep tonight. Good Lord.
I ain't complaining. I was asked how long I slept, and I said, that's all.
Woj, I know, got about 45 minutes.
Yeah, all week.
Got less than me, that's for sure. And he's a machine. He's the best.
Anyway, so look, since last we talked, Kevin Durant got traded. You guys might have heard about it. The terms of the trade were pretty remarkable. Last summer when Durant got, made his trade request, we very quickly heard that the asks were exorbitant and they really didn't get any traction because the asks were so high that nobody could bring themselves to it. And the asks were so crazy high here that, and it was basically a one team negotiation as far as I know. I'm pretty sure it was just with Phoenix. And, the difference is now they're in the middle of the season and there's a new owner. And the other thing is it added about $40 million to the Suns luxury tax. And on his first day as owner, Matt Ishbia approved a trade that not only sent out 4 first round picks, but added $40 million in luxury tax. There is 0% chance that would happen with Robert Sarver. Whether or not you think it's... Well, let me just ask you this, Bontemps. Good deal or bad deal for them?
That's a great question. I think... I'm not going to say it's a bad deal because they traded for Kevin Durant, and he is one of the best players on the planet. I don't think it's the slam dunk deal that it's been posited as by a lot of people, I think, over the past, 18 or so hours since it happened. I do think there's a lot of risk for Phoenix with this trade, not only in the long term, because obviously they traded picks for a very long time and they're relying on a mid-30s Kevin Durant and a late-30s Chris Paul to get this thing over the line. But this Phoenix Suns team essentially now has 4 good players.
Yeah.
And 3 of them, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, very importantly, and Kevin Durant, all have pretty significant muscle injury histories at this point. So obviously, I always say with a trade like this, well, teams got to stay healthy, right? But this Phoenix team, it's not just they got to stay healthy. It's like, can they stay healthy? I'm not sure that they're going to be able to based off the history of all these guys. So if they're all on the court from mid-April until mid-June, yeah, could they win 4 rounds? I could see it for sure. But a lot's got to go right for them to do that, a lot more than a lot of teams that have put themselves in this kind of position in the past.
Yeah, listen, I think it was a good deal because they did not have a chance to win a championship, and now they do. As far as the Vegas odds go, they are the Western Conference favorites right now. They are still behind the Celtics as far as overall championship odds, but they are right there in the thick of things. And look, they might pay dearly for this long term. I mean, when you're talking about picks that far out, especially when 2 of your 4 best players, including the one you traded for, are deep into their careers, who knows where those picks will be. They certainly could be lottery picks, even high lottery picks. Although if Devin Booker's there, I'm not sure high lottery is going to be the case. But hey, they have a chance to win a championship. And
if they win one, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. And I like a new owner coming in and saying, look, let's go for it right here, right now. And, it's just, the timing of the trade was hilarious. It happened right before Kyrie Irving started his first post-game press conference with the Dallas Mavericks. Kyrie had barely sat down, and I didn't recognize the young fella who asked this, but as he was sitting down, hey, Kyrie, you hear about the KD trade? What do you think? Kyrie's like, dude. you can ask me that a little bit. Can we just focus on, I'm happy we won the game.
It was a really nice win, actually, I thought. Yeah. It was a nice win for
Matt. Important win.
But it's not symbolic, just a nice
win, an important win.
Yeah.
No doubt. But it's symbolic of just the way that Kyrie, a sidekick again and again and again. The Kyrie trade rocks the NBA. And boy, that's all everybody's buzzing about right up until KD gets traded.
Om Young-Wasuk was in the Clippers locker room, and he informed Kawhi. And Kawhi's trade was pretty rocking to the NBA, and that one happened
a little earthquake.
That was a little bit later.
It was after midnight West Coast, right?
Well, yeah. I don't know if it was later than this. It was at least 2 or 2:30.
Okay.
Eastern,
well,
I mean.
Yeah. West Coast time, the trade went down around 11, I think. 10:45 or 11. Yeah. and it was just funny, because when the Kawhi trade happened and everybody was like, five first round picks, blah, blah, blah. The reaction was stunning. The reaction on this was stunning. So Om told him, and Kawhi went, huh. That was as excited as Kawhi got, as Kawhi gets, I guess. So Kyrie did have some interesting comments. McMahon, didn't he say something like, we knew this was going to happen after year one? Didn't he say something like that?
Basically said, I don't have the exact words in front of me, but yes, he essentially said, hey, this thing's been shaky since right after year one. He said he's happy for him, hopes it helps his mental well-being. And he wrapped it up by saying, I'm just glad he got out of there. I'm just glad we both escaped Brooklyn.
Sure, the Nets feel great that they spent years being dragged through the mud by the entire Kyrie Irving experience for him to spend his first several days after leaving just repeatedly bashing them.
Usually, like when Robert Sarver gave up ownership rights of his franchise, he made a billion some odd profit, like KD and Kyrie didn't even cash in the $1 billion profit when they gave up ownership rights to the Nets.
Yeah. Well, you know how we say actions over words.
That is our motto on the pod.
Actions were that Kyrie wanted an extension. He wanted a new deal last year and he wanted an extension a few weeks ago. And Shetelia Riley Irving went on the record saying that he sees Brooklyn as his long-term home. I guess that's technically words, not actions, but right. They wanted
the
an
action.
Extension.
It's the action of trying to stay in Brooklyn long-term.
Right. And the action that KD was, he signed a four-year extension. True. And, so it couldn't have been that bad, but I don't want to go back down that path.
Well, listen, one time Joe Johnson in Nets history uttered the famous phrase that, quote, it's not that bad here.
Apparently it was. But hey, the Nets are yesterday's news. Fridell's apartment lease is about to come up, and that's great timing.
Oh my god.
He'll be living out of a suitcase.
Our guy Nick Friedel immediately got shipped off to Atlanta for tonight's Suns game. All right. So Durant, there's teams I always talk about. You have one of these six or seven best players, and we can debate whether it's four, whether it's eight, who can be the finals MVP. And everything
Devin's on the list.
Yes. Every team is trying like crazy to get one of those players and then hold on to one of those players. And if you don't have one, you spend all your time trying to get one. So that is indeed what the Suns accomplished. He is 34 years old. He does have a history of injury. It's really good that he's under contract for 3 more years and that Devin Booker's under contract for 5 more years.
Yeah.
That's a really good thing. However, contract length doesn't matter in the NBA, as Kevin Durant just proved. What I think... So I totally get why the Suns did it. I think it's an absolute risk. But as much as they love Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson, and they do love them.
Yeah.
They love those guys, the twins. This morning in Atlanta, where the team was, they canceled shoot around and they had to get together before Bridges and Cam left. And there, from what I wasn't there, but I was told there were tears shed about these guys, you know, leaving, because these guys had been together for years and it was emotional. And I have spent a lot of time around the Suns. I love Bridges' game. I have a high thought about the character of Cam Johnson, but neither one of them are Kevin Durant. And even though some of these picks, especially 2027, 2029, could end up being penal, whenever you got an unprotected pick hanging out there, you're exposed. Very, very high likelihood none of those teams will be, one of those guys will be Kevin Durant. And Kevin Durant, when he's healthy, is still playing at an extremely high level.
Yeah. So they'll be good players once Kevin Durant's retired. But, you know, if you have three or four more years of KD playing at or near this level, then you cash those guys in a heartbeat.
Yeah. So I do think it's interesting to talk about it from the Nets angle. Bontemps, the first thing that happened when we talked about the possibility of Durant maybe being traded earlier this week, you thought it really made the Irving trade look strange. And I have heard nothing that has made me change my mind on that.
Well, I mean, look, I'm not going to go too much over old ground, but I thought they needed to use Kyrie to get rid of Ben Simmons. They'd look a lot different. They're in a pretty good position now, even after this trade, being a much better one if Ben Simmons wasn't on the team. But that being said,
even removing the Simmons thing, I'm talking about the package that they took.
Well, I know, but that's what I mean. They made a package. They traded for a package that was more of a win now package than one to maximize the assets for their team, which would have been to get rid of Ben Simmons. But that being said, it is worth pointing out that after these trades, the Nets, I think, have a really good chance to be in the top six in the Eastern Conference at the end of the regular season this year. And they've got a pretty good team. They don't have a great team, not a championship winning team, but they've got a ton of draft capital replenished going forward. And they've got a really solid, deep roster with versatile, switchable players on defense, a lot of shooting, and guys they can flip for more stuff later. I mean, you look at a starting lineup of Spencer Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney-Smith, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, and Nick Claxton. That's a pretty good team. That's a 43 to 45 win team. They're a lot like the Knicks. They're crosstown rivals now. I mean, again, like, it's not like the Nets are going to be a 25 win team. Like they started, you know, after they tried to rebuild out of the last, you know, big trade they made several years ago when they did the KG and Paul Pierce trade. Like they're in pretty decent shape to be a pretty decent team. But I do think if you look at this in totality, the Nets would have been much better served in the long run if they could have got off Ben Simmons. Now they're stuck with probably the worst contract in the NBA on their books, and it's going to be pretty expensive for them to move on from.
Yeah, and one thing with the Nets is they have no benefit from bottoming out because they owe two unprotected picks, two unprotected swaps over the next 4 years to the Rockets. But there is benefit in maximizing how much draft capital they can get. They could have squeezed an extra pick out of Lakers. Although, listen, we've talked about that 2029 Mavs pick, depending on how things go, that certainly could have significant value. Or, hey, if the Mavericks keep Luka happy, it might be a pick that's real late in the draft. You know, we will see about that.
I will say this. I thought that the Kyrie trade might have made more sense. But look, Dorian Finney-Smith is worth a first-round pick.
I was going to say, if they want to pivot this summer, you're on it right now.
I'm not necessarily sure I would say that about Dinwiddie. He has some value.
Other than Simmons, they got a bunch of pretty good players. They'll have a lot of expiring contracts after this year. I mean, they got flexibility to go in a lot of different directions. Mm-hmm. They could do a lot of different things.
Bridges has, OG Anunoby didn't end up getting traded, but there was talk about three first-round picks for him. Bridges, is a better version of that player.
And locked in on a good deal.
Finney Smith certainly not as versatile offensively as Bridges in particular. But like you said, Wendy, like if they want to get a first round pick for Dorian Finney Smith, they will be able to do that. Good teams want players like him for sure.
Okay, well, let me just say this about Phoenix. Phoenix has two roster spots open. they don't seem to be all that worried about luxury tax in their new world order.
That's a big change.
Can you imagine, just imagine Robert Sarver being presented with a trade that offer? I mean, they wouldn't even bring it to him.
But it's a rounding error on what Ishbia just paid for the franchise. You know, $4 billion valuation. He paid like 2 point whatever. It's a
By the way, so I'm pretty sure I got the timeline on this. The Board of Governors approved his owner. I mean, once the league office, gives the thumbs up, it's a formality. But although Dan Gilbert, his business rival as a mortgage broker, as a mortgage company in Michigan, abstained. The thumbs up came from the league on Monday. Clear to close. If you were buying a house, you've ever bought a house or anything, you know, you've heard the clear to close. The transaction closed on Tuesday.
Real estate in the Dallas area, holler at me.
I was going to say the IT department for the Dallas Bureau is your go-to source for that.
Yeah.
In North Texas.
Your wife, McMahon, loves to hear clear to close, because that means the agent is about to get paid. Clear to close is the
3%,
best
brother.
So Tuesday, the money transfers. He didn't actually transfer $4 billion. He bought some percentage of the team for
$2.4 billion.
Yeah. But, he had to get that money together. I'll bet that was he's a billionaire, but I don't think he was quite like Ballmer, who just basically had a cashier's check issued to Donald Sterling.
Whatever the amount
Ballmer
officially
who just
was.
Dug around in the couches in his one of his mansions.
That's right. Whatever the amount officially was, it was a lot of money for him to get together. Whatever it was.
So basically he took, they signed the papers and the money transferred, however that works, on Tuesday. Robert Sarver was out of the league by Tuesday. And then yesterday, he flies to Phoenix and has his press conference. He has like an all hands meeting with the staff, has his press conference where he seems like he's a pretty engaging guy. He didn't stand behind a podium. I mean, there was a podium, but he was just walking around talking and answering questions. And then like 7 or 8 hours later, executes the biggest trade in the history of the franchise.
One of the biggest in the history of the league.
Yeah. I mean, talk about a first day. I mean, that is wild. I mean, from what I understand, the trade talks were for Durant had started about on Monday. Mm-hmm. Kevin, at some point will discuss it. My guess is it will be because he's injured right now and he's not necessarily in an all out rush to get to Phoenix. He has to have his physical for the trade, but he doesn't have to do that in Phoenix. My guess is we'll hear on his own boardroom podcast, his thoughts on it. And I don't know if he'll ever articulate it. But obviously the Kyrie trade happened and Kevin then became interested in leaving because that's when the talk started. And so they did talk. So Ishbia, knew Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday that there were talks. He was being briefed on that. So it wasn't like it all happened right after he got the team, but it's a crazy situation. It'll be interesting to see how they mesh everybody, but there's no state income tax in Arizona. It wasn't like that, they traded all their draft capital, but they didn't harm their like star players. Like at the end of the day, Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson are high level role players. Mm-hmm. Whatever you think of DeAndre Ayton, he's had 35-15 games in the last week.
He's a good player. And look, if this summer they decide that they need depth, they can certainly turn DeAndre Ayton into some depth.
I agree. And obviously they have Chris Paul, who's not having a great season, but still very highly competitive. And they've got Devin Booker, who was an MVP candidate and could be again.
Starter, do you think?
Well, they did another trade today with Dario Saric. They sent Dario Saric to Oklahoma City. And I don't even remember what they got in that deal.
They got Darius Bazley back.
I don't know. Yeah. Damian Lee, Josh Okogie, Torrey Craig.
I would say that was much about saving money as anything, that trade.
Yeah. Yeah. Good question.
Who knows? Maybe it's somebody who ends up getting a buyout. Like you said, no state income tax, a chance to contend for championships, warm weather in the winter. Scottsdale doesn't necessarily hurt recruiting efforts.
Right. Okay, so that was the Durant trade. I mean, we're going to talk a lot about that going forward. I mean, we could seriously do another hour on it. I've been talking about it all day. Part of it is I'm a little bit worn out on talking about it. I will say this. I've talked to some people in the Phoenix organization, and I know that there was this kind of thought that this new owner came in and, you know, made a new owner mistake and just gave away the farm for this player. And like, look, this may end up being a mistake. Okay. I'm not going to deny that. But in talking to several different people in the Suns organization, I feel like they were all on the same page with this. I think what I know is that Brooklyn put out an offer on Monday, I believe, at least the beginning of the week, and pretty much didn't budge from that offer. And, you know, I don't know how close they got with any other teams. I have no idea. But they pretty much said this is what it's going to take. And the Suns, at the end of the day, acquiesced to it. And so they did it because Ishbia was there. But as the week went on and they discussed it more and more and they looked at it, I believe from my discussions that James Jones, the general manager, I think he's president, general manager, he was in alignment with Matt Ishbia. I think that it is easy to make an assumption, and I actually kind of was thinking that might have been the case, but I did the reporting, and I feel comfortable in saying that there was alignment in the organization. I'll be interested to hear what Devin Booker says about it publicly, but from what I understand, he's extremely excited. There's a game going on right now. He'll talk after the game. By the time you hear this podcast, we'll have had his quotes. So I don't think Monty's allowed to talk about it because the trade hasn't gone through yet. Right. I don't know if it'll go through tonight or not, but
the trade has gone through.
It has gone through.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. We have all the emails.
Okay.
Look, if you're going to give up the farm, do it for a racehorse with triple crown potential.
Well, and let's ask the question too, because I mean, you referenced the championship odds according to Vegas. Who do you pick to come out of the West right now? Again, I know you don't make predictions, win horse, but just play the game. Who do you think is
when
the favorite?
When I make them, I sometimes hit them, baby.
Sometimes. Who do you think the favorite is right now?
I think I saw it earlier.
I told you.
No, I'm not. No. I'm saying who do I think individually. I'm not saying the odds.
I've never seen a trade. Have we ever seen a trade of a player this good at midseason?
This good? I'm trying to remember the last blockbuster trade that boosted a team to a championship. I was probably Clyde Drexler, and that was actually a defending
championship. Well, Pau Gasol, Rasheed Wallace, and
Pau Gasol is a pretty good comparison.
Yeah, but this,
so is
Pau Gasol wasn't Kevin Durant.
And this guy's like, and neither was Clyde. I mean, those are Hall of Fame players. They are not Kevin Durant.
The two trades I thought about, and you know, obviously, if you listen to trivia on this pod, my mind isn't good for this. McMahon is great. The two trades I thought about were Rasheed Wallace to the Pistons. He was not their best player. They didn't have their hierarchy was a little bit more.
He was their most talented player, probably, but not their best player.
I would agree with that. But what happened on with that team is he inserted himself in that team and they became an absolute defensive.
Fit like a glove. Yep.
Just death grip. And then Gasol, and clearly Gasol was an incredibly high level supporting star, but he was not an MVP candidate.
I mean, if you talk about MVPs traded midseason, we got to go all the way back to last year when James Harden was from the Brooklyn Nets.
Was he playing like an MVP? I mean, you know, actually Harden.
He was playing at a high level last year until he decided not to.
Harden is a comparable player, but
Durant's at a different bigger. Level. Like, yeah. If we're talking about when's the last time a better player was traded midseason? Well, dude, there ain't very many better players.
Not many players are better.
Yeah.
We've gotten away from the question.
It's a short list.
We've gotten away from the question.
All right.
Who do you two think is the favorite right now in the West?
It's very hard for me to know how in the hell they're going to mesh when they bring in one of the top 10 players, top whatever you want. I don't want to fight.
Do you agree?
I still think Denver. Wendy's going to wishwash. I still think Denver. I do think there's something to be said for chemistry. I do think there's something to be said for continuity. I do think that there's a very strong argument that Denver still has the best player in the NBA, you know, in the Western Conference. Now, look.
Jamal Murray's, by the way, is getting better and better by the week.
Yeah, Murray looks like a co-star again. Yeah. Aaron Gordon's been phenomenal all season. Michael Porter Jr. is one hell of a third offensive option. You know, we've talked about KCP.
Yep.
I would have loved it if they could have accomplished getting something this season for Bones Highland, but getting Thomas Bryant solves their biggest rotation problem of the backup big. I'm still going to stick with the Nuggets, but I certainly wouldn't take Nuggets versus the field. I can tell you that. Not with how much stronger the field got.
Field got
all
stronger.
All right, Buntemps, where
field
are you
got
at?
Stronger. Field got stronger, obviously, across the board. I'm taking the team I was taking before this week started. It's Golden State. I think if Golden State, 4 out of 7, plays any of these teams, I'm still picking them to win. I mean, for example, again, health's obviously a huge factor for them too, but you look at the Phoenix Suns, who's guarding Steph Curry on the Phoenix Suns? Like, I mean, that's going to be a very, very difficult matchup now for them. You know, obviously they match up pretty well with Denver. You've got Draymond Green, who could do some things to Nikola Jokic and PJ Tucker did on a much higher level when they played Philly a couple weeks ago and looked pretty rough in the second half of that game. So, but look, I think we thought all year the West was wide open. My thing is, I know the odds shifted to where Phoenix is second. I still think it's Boston and Milwaukee and then everybody else. I think the West all got better. I think Phoenix jumped up, but I can't wait for these West playoffs. I just hope everybody's healthy because they got a chance to be absolutely awesome.
Well, never underestimate the heart of a champion, as Rudy Tomjanovich said, and you know, expand that. Never underestimate the heart of a dynasty. So I could sit there and poo-poo you with Warriors road record, all that kind of crap. But look,
when do you ever pass up a chance to poo-poo Bontemps?
Well, no, apparently, though,
I was trying to also segue us into talking about another significant trade today, too. How about that?
But yeah, I might have mentioned this last week. I'm apparently on like the hater reel on Steph Curry's little Apple Plus movie. Somebody saw it at Sundance when I was in Salt Lake City. Yeah, there's like Steph Curry has an Apple Plus movie. Oh, Bontemps, apparently you're on the hater reel, too, I was told.
What?
I guess you and I were you know, pooping all over the Warriors championship odds, I guess in the middle of the season last year. I don't know the exact clip, but I'm told that you and I are on the Warriors hater reel on this new
Listen, McMahon and I at Sundance. What a world. two less likely people you could ever find.
That's the only way we're ever getting anywhere near Sundance. I can promise you that. But segue, my friend.
That's right.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. All right, so you're talking about the Warriors deal that they made to get Gary Payton. By the way, it was like the reunion trade deadline. Jakob Poeltl back to Toronto.
Yeah.
John Wall back to Houston. Was very excited to see that reunion.
After trying to kill McMahon yesterday, by the way.
Oh, listen, I'm sure that John Wall reunion is going to be long lasting.
The LA Clippers saw Ben McMahon nearly get taken out yesterday going on TV and said, we got to get John Wall out the door.
That's right.
ASAP.
So McMahon, real quick, tell the story of what happened with you and John Wall yesterday.
So we're set up for the 6 Eastern Sports Center, and we were going late in that, so we were going to have a 3:55 hit, and then the Clippers moved up there. They call it the stay ready game, you know, guys like Wall, who's, I don't know, we're fucking quote injured or whatever, right. You know, reserve some of the coaches, you know, those games, just a scrimmage. And so security's like, hey, you know, we're going to need you. I said, oh, we said, okay, hey, can we just come back for like 3 minutes, do the hit, and then get out of there? And like, okay, sure, no problem. So we come back and it's like 90 seconds to air, and I hear, that's a foul. And then I just feel thud right in my back. I'm on the baseline. Now I'll say, I stood my ground. John Wall didn't seem too concerned about my health, but that's because he knew that I'm, you know, I'm like Timex or Timex, I guess. Can take a lick and keep on ticking.
That's terrible.
You know, so he oh didn't check God. On me, but I think he had faith that you know, that I could stand strong. And I you know, it went on the air and kind of I might have bumbled and stumbled, but that's not necessarily unusual. It wasn't related to the hit, I can tell you that.
Yeah. And you knocked him right out of LA. Within hours, he was no longer on the team.
I think Mr. Wall was in route to another destination already. And by the way, en route to destination unknown, because again, John Wall will score as many points during this stint in Houston as Russell Westbrook does in Utah. I am confident saying that.
Well, anyway, the reunion we were talking about is Gary Payton II back to Golden State. The Warriors.
Fascinating trade.
So 5 second-round picks.
You want me to just lay it out quick so we can lay it all out, Brian?
I just want to say real quick, I don't know whether the Warriors, how aggressive they were going to be, but they obviously, after the Durant trade, wanted to get another perimeter defender. And they tried on OG Anunoby.
Which, I was going to say, you heard a lot of that.
But they did. I mean, again, kind of like with Kyle Lowry, Bontemps has been talking about this, kind of like with Kyle Lowry 2 years ago, a lot of talking out of Toronto. They ended up buying.
Awesome. Masai Ujiri has a very long track record of being very patient when it comes to these trades. And it's why I kept saying for the past month, they might trade these guys and they might not. And obviously they ended up buying and getting Jakob Poeltl. But just to lay it out real quick, Gary Payton goes from Portland to Golden State. James Wiseman goes from Golden State to Detroit. Sadiq Bey goes to the Atlanta Hawks and a bunch of, I think Kevin Knox and a bunch of draft picks, 5 second-round picks ultimately ended up in Portland, just to lay out the framework of the trade. Very interesting deal.
So are teams getting like 3 second-round picks a year now? Because everyone's trading 5. I'm like, how does this math
work? The Atlanta Hawks traded 7 second-round picks on deadline day. 7.
Wow.
Also, one of the things that's been whispered about in the executive circles on deadline day, I haven't talked to him, to be clear, but our guy Mike Schmitz with Joe Cronin, the front office in Portland, their first year, I guess Cronin was the acting GM a year ago, but Schmitz's first deadline. Anyway, I guess that like they were, the story is they were holding the Warriors' feet to the fire for every last one of those picks.
I'm sure Schmitz likes, you know, I'm sure Schmitz has some ideas about who those second rounders are going to be.
Hey, listen, he drafted Jabari Walker at 57, 58 this year, past year's draft. He looks pretty nice. Pretty nice pick by Mike Schmitz.
And by the way, so one of the other trades that that Portland made, they on Wednesday, they traded Josh Hart to the Knicks for a first round pick. And if the Knicks miss the playoffs this year, that pick immediately transfers to 4 second-rounders. So, look, I think the Knicks have a good chance.
Which pick is it? Do we know?
The Knicks pick this year.
The Knicks own pick this year. They either give it to them if they make the playoffs, or it becomes 4 second-rounders.
I hear you.
And I also hear that that was a grinding negotiation for those 4 second-rounders. But, you know, if the Knicks miss the playoffs, which I actually think the Knicks' odds of making the playoffs increase because the Nets have a good lead on them. But, so the Blazers could come away from this trade deadline having gotten 9 second-round picks. All right.
Their summer league squad is going to be awesome.
Bontemps, Gary Payton coming back. His season has been derailed a little bit due to injury, but this guy was an important player for them. And the Warriors could have just done the Wiseman trade and saved the money. And it would have been massive, massive savings. And they are going to save money next year a little bit, but it was a pretty significant move for the Warriors to go do this. And you know, giving up on Wiseman, But also,
yeah, that's where we need to start. I mean, they saved a little bit of money. They could have, I think you could debate whether you'd rather have Sadiq Bey or Gary Payton II. I think there's pros and cons in both directions there. Obviously Golden State prioritized getting a guy that's familiar with their system, mm-hmm. knows how they want to play. Steve Kerr is obviously going to trust him. He loves Gary Payton II, loved having him with the team mm-hmm. last year. Like you said, he was a big part of their run to the title. But this trade is about the Warriors moving on from James Wiseman. And we've spent a lot of time the past couple of years talking about, when are the Warriors going to make this decision? Are they going to keep sticking with James Wiseman, or are they going to pull the plug? And obviously today, looking at the Western Conference, they decided to get another perimeter defender who knows their system and pulled the plug on James Wiseman. And frankly, I think it was the right move. Like, I'm not saying James Wiseman has no chance to become a decent to good NBA player down the road. He very well might be. He's had a star-crossed run. He's barely gotten a chance to play. He's had injuries. He had his, obviously, 1 year at Memphis derailed, but he needs a chance to get on the court and get minutes. And that just was not going to happen with the Warriors. And the Warriors are trying to win a championship, and Steph Curry and Draymond Green and Klay Thompson are running out of time, and getting Gary Payton II in there, I think, makes a ton of sense. I understand why they did it. I think it was the right move all the way around.
It's interesting that it's Detroit, and look, I get it. Like, it's a guy who is a former number two overall pick, still young. There's potential there. The only reason I say it's interesting is because they do have literally the youngest player in the league starting for them at center right now, in a lottery pick, Jalen Duren, that they really like. So, you know,
they traded up to get him.
Yeah. Right? He's had a nice rookie year.
Well, Sadiq Bey is also a decent wing. I mean, he shot 38% as a rookie. He's been down around 34.5% the past couple of years, but in today's NBA, where everybody's trying to find wing players, they sort of decided to trade out Sadiq Bey for James Wiseman, which is an interesting upside play given where they were drafted. But, you know, you heard Sadiq Bey's name come up a bunch the last couple of months. I always thought it was kind of odd. And look, for an Atlanta team that needs perimeter defenders and guys to play around their guards, I like the move for the Hawks. I think it's a pretty slick piece of business for them.
Almost Mav Sadiq Bey. He was the guy that Donnie Nelson was going to pick in that draft until he realized, oh, wait, this ain't my draft to run. It's Bob Vulgaris. and the rest is history. By the way,
the guy they did draft is pretty good.
He's, you know, we can talk about he ain't Desmond Bane, but Josh Green is really good. And the Mavericks are the one negotiating win they had in that Nets deal was keeping him out of it. And if the Mavericks make a run, people are going to know Josh Green really well by the end of this postseason.
Well, by the way, first major deal for Landry Fields as the general manager of the Hawks, getting Sadiq Bey. But one of the reasons why the Warriors wanted to move off Wiseman, he obviously had been a disappointment, but he is scheduled to make $12 million next year.
Yeah,
their payroll is headed north of $400 million, and they just didn't feel like he was a $12 million player.
Well, and it's not a $12 million player. It's a $12 million times whatever with the luxury tax.
Right, yeah, I mean, they saved $7 million this year, and they saved $30 million next year, according to Bobby Marks. Just on that deal alone.
So Gary Payton makes a little under $9 million next year, and just that $3 million difference is multiplied by six or seven. Mm-hmm. It's where you get that $30 million number. So that's part of it. I mean, I think if the luxury tax wasn't involved, I'm not so sure they would have given up on Wiseman just yet, but you know, it was so,
right.
But the other contender out West that made sort of a significant move was Memphis.
Well, two other contenders did, but go on.
Partly in the same deal.
We haven't gotten to the Lakers yet.
Well, but, I said two other contenders. Talk
about the Clippers.
We'll talk about the Clippers.
Wow. What are we doing here?
Not contenders for play-in.
Oh man, there's going to be some consternation on the internet about that one. Trying to shoehorn the Lakers into the contending class after getting D'Angelo Russell.
Do vampires sleep?
Oh, anyways, go on. Man. Oh man, that was a missile.
I don't know. I'm just asking. Sesame Street. I love Count Dracula growing up.
We were on air today on our 5 hour long. I mean, it was 5 hours. It felt like 10. Trade deadline special that Malika Andrews hosted from front to back with like 30 of us. And Dave McMenamin, Ramona Shelburne, and I were in this segment talking about the Westbrook trade. And Dave said, I believe I'm quoting him accurately, said a team source told me that trading Westbrook was like getting rid of a vampire in the locker room. And I mean, I wasn't on screen because it was a solo shot on Dave. And it was a good thing I wasn't, because my head snapped back.
Dave likes those solo shots.
Oh my God. What?
Woo!
Oof. I mean, that was some,
what's going on in Transylvania?
That had some teeth. How about that?
All right, well, let's talk about the good teams first. Then we'll get to the Lakers.
Right.
We'll
just get the bad joke,
the Laker fans a little more mad.
Stop. Start with Memphis. Memphis, one of the worst jump shooting teams in the league. In their recent skid, they've been really, really bad. I know that they really had hoped Danny Green, who was included in that trade, ended up in Houston. He'll get bought out, I'm fairly certain.
I would think so.
I mean, I'm sure they'd love to have Danny Green there as a veteran leader, but I'm not sure Danny wants any part of that Rocket situation. They get Luke Kennard, who led the league in three-point shooting last year and is in the top couple this year, has injury problems, but you know, the type of player they need. And you look, when you make a trade as a contender at the deadline, what you're saying, can we get a guy that can help us win a couple of playoff games? And I think he can, McMahon.
I completely agree. And look, they were a team that was also, you know, very much in the OG Anunoby bidding. Obviously, that was a priority for them. It didn't happen. Luke Kennard is not anywhere close to that level of a two-way player, but as you said, he is an absolute just knockdown shooter. And this is a team that struggles to score at times in the half court. That you know, and they have a lot of bad shooters in the rotation, to be honest with you. Now, if he's healthy, they're always going to have at least one elite knockdown three-point shooter on the floor, because Desmond Bane is that, you know, he's one of the best shooters in the league too. So now with him and Kennard, you know, those guys will play together sometimes. There will be times that the Grizzlies put out really, really good shooting lineups, you know, which is when you have a guy like John Morant, like he's going to create good looks for you. So, that, you know, but Kennard is not the shot creator that Bane is, that Bane has worked to become. But if he's getting set up, he's going to knock them down when they're good looks for sure.
Well, listen, they're 17th in offensive rating. They're second in defensive rating. They've got the runaway favorite to win defensive player of the year and Jaren Jackson Jr. behind him. And clearly they decided they could sacrifice some defense for offense, and to get where they want to go, they probably needed to. I echo what you guys said in terms of what Memphis is doing there. I thought the Clippers had a really good day. I mean, turning essentially Kennard, who was not really playing for the Clippers, John Wall and Reggie Jackson into Bones Highland, good flyer for them as a younger guy. See how he does there. He doesn't need to play for them, but they can, you know, see if they can develop him into something with a roster without a lot of young talent. Mason Plumlee, who gives them a lot of the things they had from Isaiah Hartenstein last year, could do some dribble handoff stuff, really good passer out of the high post, can run some different stuff with him. He's had a really good year for Charlotte. There was some, you know, there was talk leading into the deadline, maybe he'd end up as a buyout guy in LA. Obviously now he gets to keep his bird rights, gets to the Clippers now. And then getting Eric Gordon, a guy who, you know, McMahon has been all over the Eric Gordon beat for years. It's felt like he's been in purgatory in Houston for a really long time.
Yeah, him and John Collins have been in trade rumors for years now. Collins is to be continued. Gordon finally got out.
Yes, and I think he, you know, he's another guy, a floor spacer, can guard. He's going to be motivated, I'm sure, going to a situation like that in L.A. Fits with the way those guys play. And you mentioned it, Brian. Danny Green, the buyout market's generally overrated. Danny Green is a guy I'm very curious to see where he winds up. We asked earlier about where that fifth starter is in Phoenix. I could certainly see them going after Danny Green. He would be an interesting fit there. He'd be an interested fit on basically any contender as a potential 3-and-D wing veteran presence. So I'll be curious.
Actually in a guy that the Clippers did trade, and that's Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson is a dude who, you know, you've heard like the Mr. May jokes, because he showed up in playoffs before, and you know, I'll just throw one team out there that could certainly use his services, and that's the team I'm kept the most often. The Dallas Mavericks need a third ball handler. He would certainly fit that bill.
What about Russ? I think Russ would be great. I think it would be awesome if you had Kyrie and Russ.
I think
loquacious Luka Doncic would be great.
I think Russ's third fiddle has proven to be something that you really want to
you strive for
energy into. Plus, the Vampires don't like they don't do well in heat. It's a little hot.
But 6 weeks ago, last time I was in LA for NBA Today, Danny Green was on the show. We were talking about trades and he was sitting next to me.
You traded him.
And I said, Danny, I put my arm around him. I go, Danny, they might trade you. And people, couldn't believe that I had dared to say that Danny Green might get traded. The guy's been traded like 7 times in his career.
I mean, Jerry Stackhouse had a classic line, the check's cash in all 50 states and Canada. listen, I can empathize with guys who you got to pack up and, especially if you have family and all that stuff. Like, I get it. I empathize. I'm also envious on the 1st and the 15th. So it's part of the business.
Yeah, for sure.
The Clippers, I thought I saw some grades out there that were kind of shaky on them. There were some people on our panel that didn't love their day. And I was like, really? They got Bones Highland. I know he's a limited Bones player.
Yeah, Bones, that to me, that's a future move. It is interesting because, like, the guys he reminds you of are former Clippers Sixth Man of the Year.
Jamal Crawford and Lou Williams, yeah.
Exactly. I think that's the kind of player he has a chance to be. I think putting him out, look, if Michael Malone thought he could be put on the floor in a playoff series right now, he wouldn't have been traded for 2 second-round picks, right?
That's right.
2 seconds. That's right. And the draft compensation that they had to give for Eric Gordon was – a partial pick swap.
Yeah, it's swapping one they got off of John Wall, which was clearly something that they were going to do one way or the other, whether it was buying them out or trading them.
Right.
And then
they're picking the Bucks pick, right?
You're right. It's a pick swap it's the Rockets' rights, but they have the rights to swap the Clippers for the Bucks. So depending on how things go, the Bucks will be late in the first round. Clippers ain't gonna be too, it's not like you're moving up 12, 14 spots. Maybe it's 8, 10, I don't know, 6. We'll see.
Well, speaking of the Bucks, they play across the street here in a couple hours, going for their 9th straight win. I don't know what'll happen. I like their chances considering LeBron isn't playing tonight.
Plus half the Lakers roster is like in transit.
That's right. Well, the Lakers, not including Hachimura, the Lakers traded 5 players today and acquired 5. Well, in the last 2 days.
Yeah.
Traded 5 and acquired 5. And during the entire trade season, traded for 6 players, which is exactly what you needed. It's never a good sign, by the way, when you trade out like half your roster during the year. It means things aren't going to plan. But I do think that they had a decent day. But first off, I want to talk about the Bucks. They tried to get Jay Crowder for months, couldn't do a deal with Phoenix. And then, in the middle of the night last night, and the Bucks are all out here and their owners are out here and their front office is out here. They're all here. It was like midnight last night. Like all of a sudden they're world champs, and Jay Crowder all of a sudden is a net. And now the team they've been negotiating with and trying like hell to make a deal is now you like pivot. And they ended up giving 5 second round picks in a 3-team trade. They offloaded salary to the Pacers. The Pacers rented their cap space for them. I don't know. I saw somebody did the math, 270 days since Jay Crowder has played. I don't know what they're getting, but Bontemps, this is a similar type trade to acquiring PJ Tucker at the deadline, the year that they won the title.
Certainly what they hope it is.
And like, this is what the Bucks do. The Bucks, they stitch things together. And like John Horst, their GM, like he is underrated. Look, it's really nice to have Giannis Antetokounmpo. As somebody who's covered LeBron for decades, I can tell you that the GMs who've had LeBron, they look pretty good. Okay.
Most of them.
It helps to have LeBron. John Horst will be the first to tell you that Giannis is the driving force, but they've done some nice stuff around the margins in recent years. And this is a nice, move, Bontemps.
Look, they every year at the deadline have aggressively tried to get better. They've added Nico Mirotic in the past. They got PJ Tucker. Obviously today they get Jay Crowder. Last year they just moved some money around. They got Serge Ibaka. That didn't do much, but they're always trying to do stuff. And I'll also say this too. The Bucks have spent a lot of money putting together this team, and they added to it today, like getting Jay Crowder. They have a couple roster spots opened up. They moved out Jordan Nwora, moved out George Hill, moved out Ibaka, who obviously wasn't going to be a factor for them. They could be another team that's potentially intriguing for some buyout guys, even though the buyout market generally is very overrated. You know, maybe they'll catch lightning in a bottle with a guy. But look, they had one of the best teams in the league, and they went out and got a guy in Jay Crowder, who, if he comes in and is anything close to the guy that they hope he is, he's a guy that can play in the final two or three rounds of the playoffs. If you can get one of those guys at the trade deadline, that's a win. And when you look at the top of the Eastern Conference, they got Jay Crowder and the Celtics got Mike Muscala. Two teams at the top added depth pieces, helped them get farther in the playoffs. And outside of the Nets, everybody else essentially stood pat. So if you're those two teams, I feel pretty good about the way this shook out, because nobody really closed the gap for me with the Bucks and the Celtics and everybody else.
I think that Crowder, I definitely like this move. I think he's lost a half step defensively, but he's still a tough, physical, switchable, competitive defender. He's more of a volume shooter than a pure shooter for sure. But, when he gets hot, he shot lights out during the Heat's final run. He stretches the floor, teams guard him out there. And the Bucks front office has done a great, even some of the summer stuff that they've done, getting Bobby Portis kind of as a bargain bin guy, Brooke Lopez, and look how well that's turned out.
Yeah, Bobby Portis, it wasn't a deadline deal, but that was a nice move too, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, look, they've done a great job building out the roster. They've done a great job.
You didn't mention Philly. I like Philly's trade. I like Jalen McDaniels.
Not only that, they got under the tax with that trade.
Yeah, they were going to get out of the. They were either going to make a big upgrade or get out of the tax, and that was an odd move for Charlotte. I'm not really sure what Charlotte was doing there. I got Matisse Thybulle going to Portland, even though he's sort of a different version of Josh Hart. They got a bunch of assets and replaced Josh Hart. I thought that made sense. I think Philly getting a young, interesting wing made sense getting out of the tax. I don't really know what Charlotte was doing, but
that's okay.
Selling players,
but
they
also
sold Plumlee and they sold McDaniels.
True, but I don't. To me, that was a nice move, McMahon, but it didn't close the gap with those other two teams. I need to see Philly beat Milwaukee or Boston.
McMahon
they didn't
is
add
really,
a meaningful upgrade.
I mean, Bontemps is really a fan of the Muscala move, and I will say I watched him this week in person. And the Moose Man just crushed the Lakers with a bunch of threes. They were not exactly getting out to the perimeter that night.
That's but former Lakers great Mike Muscala, the one who gave up Vika Zubac for.
Yes, that's correct.
Well, I like the Muscala trade a lot better for the Celtics that they just made than the one that the Lakers made. I'll say that.
Well, yeah, obviously. Look, Boston, again, I was in Boston last night. They played Philly. Great win. Four starters out. We'll see how long Jaylen Brown's out after accidentally getting hit in the face by Jason Tatum during that game. But they had three starters out the whole game. They go on and win, beat the Sixers, who are healthy, fully ready to go for the game. And Robert Williams and Al Horford both didn't play. So obviously, very impressive win for Boston to do that. But they've been managing. Al Horford hasn't played in the second half of a back-to-back all season. He sat out last night with knee soreness that kind of popped up out of nowhere. You have Robert Williams, who they're obviously going to be careful with his ankles and knees after all the injuries he's had over the years. He missed the first 2 months of the season after knee surgery. And Muscala can play the exact role that Al Horford's playing now as a floor space and big. He's a smart player, knows how to play. And as you mentioned, Brian, you look at the numbers. When he's been on the court for the Thunder, they've been really, really good. And, it certainly isn't going to hurt their chances of sliding a little bit back to not have him on the team, as you mentioned on TV earlier today. But it's not a huge piece, but you look at all these depth bigs that got traded around, Mo Bamba ended up on the Lakers. Like we joked about Muscala and the Ivica Zubac trade. Muscala would have helped the Lakers. I would rather have him. And if for the Celtics to get him for 2 seconds on a team option for next year for 3.5, it's a small move, but for a team needs some depth, it's a really good move.
I'm not sure that the Thunder are interested in making those playoffs. I think they're okay with where they're at. The thing about the Thunder is, I'm extraordinarily impressed with their perimeter.
Are you calling them the tanker again?
I did.
Why?
It's not tanking.
You used to just mock them as the tanker all the time, Wendy. I can't believe you used to
that. I mean, look, I don't want any calls. The thing about it is, like, their biggest weakness is that their interior defense is awful.
Well, and they have a certain guy who is going to be pretty darn good, in my opinion, Chet Thompson, who ain't playing. Or Chet Holmgren. I almost said Klay Thompson. I messed that up. I'm tired.
We are tired.
Okay,
so Chet Holmgren is going to be a very good player
right now. Game six, Klay showed up in the regular season.
That's right. But Chet Holmgren is going to be a good player. And if he was just healthy and you drop him in on the Thunder, they're making the playoffs this year. Like,
well, he fills two needs for them. Their two biggest needs: shooting and rim protection.
That's right.
Yeah, and Bukashevsky is also out. Not that he's Olajuwon, but they lose one of the big guys that they
would be able to put in. 12 pounds.
Hey, he was out. He was out here, and they wanted to make sure Poku was there to witness the LeBron. So
if you're trying to tank, you can't let Poku play point guard. They found that out against the Daniel Arturo led Clippers a couple years ago.
It was a memorable game that night. Before we go, I do want to talk about the Lakers. So this is a nuanced conversation. McMenamin, who's covered the NBA for almost as long as I have and seen some stuff, I respect his opinion. He came to me when I got out here on Tuesday, when I came to the Laker game on Tuesday, and he just said, speaking out of term, he's just like, Westbrook can't stay here much longer. He goes,
Ryan, he called him a vampire on television today.
He didn't call him a vampire.
Whatever. Called him a vampire. The point is, I don't think you're speaking out of turn for him saying it was bad with Westbrook and with the Lakers.
He ain't going to Russ's birthday party regardless at this point.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, but nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, hoodie teenagers, girl-sinking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Put it this way. I want to be clear. I've been to 3 Laker games this year. I am not reporting myself to be a Laker insider.
Wendy. Yes, sir.
but having been around that team that day, let's just say that I don't think Patrick Beverley, who I like as a guy, I've known him for years. He was in no mood, and Russ was in no mood. And like, even watching the interactions when they're out on the court between LeBron and Russ, whoa, boy.
There were strange mojo when LeBron broke the record, and including by a superstar who's still on the team.
I don't know how to explain that. There's some theories on there about that, but we're going to save that for later on. Not in this pod. It'll be in another day. I think they're going to be energized by this, but what Dave was saying is, just in the brief time that I saw, is basically Russ had to go. I think if they didn't find a trade for Russ, I don't know for sure if they would have done this, but I suspect they would have considered sending him home. And I don't know if that would have led to a buyout or whatever, but they did get a trade for him. And they used one first round pick in Russell Westbrook, and they got 3 good rotation players. I'm not going to call D'Angelo Russell a star, even though I know he's been an all-star. But he and Mike and Malik Beasley will stretch the floor and give the Lakers something that they didn't have. And after getting hollowed out by that Westbrook trade, which is such a disaster, they replenish their team a little bit.
It's the reverse of that deal, basically.
I think a little bit is a very important phrase to put in there.
Yeah. Well, I would just say this.
Vanderbilt's a good energy guy.
Yes. If this was the team that they started the season with, they would be in the top six. That's my opinion.
I think that's a stretch, buddy.
I'm not saying they'd be second. By the way, top six is what?
It's not three games great, over 500. Yeah, guess what? They're five games under.
You know what? I'm gonna say for sure they would be in the top six. Because
Wendy will make predictions when they can't be proven.
This is a ludicrous prediction
that can never be proven. This is just ludicrous. Time machine.
Here's the thing: they started the season 2-8, and they're a couple of games over 500 since then. With this
top six, the Clippers are four games above 500. The Lakers are five games under. Come on.
I got this, McMahon.
Listen, hold your water.
Let's just do it this way. Hold on. We're going to play a little game.
It's Wendy's pod. He says, hold your water. You got to shut up, dude.
We're going to have Brian do lots of talking here. Would the Lakers be ahead of Denver?
No.
Would they be ahead of Memphis?
No.
Would they be ahead of Dallas?
They might be right there.
At 30-26?
They'd be ahead of Phoenix?
Yeah.
Ahead of the Clippers?
Yeah.
You're saying they would have been nine games better?
Yeah.
That's pretty.
I'm going to tell you why. Because they started this year 2-10 with this roster being absolutely just ridiculous and starting Westbrook and all that stuff. And since they were 2-10, they are how many games over 500?
A couple.
They're five games under 500 right now.
So three games over 500.
Man, playing that
league on fire.
Just ridiculous.
Do the Lakers have one of the eight best rosters in the Western Conference?
All right. For somebody who hates talking about the Lakers, you sure are. You talk about the water. You're carrying the water. Hey. What are you doing?
Ouch. Ooh, that stung. That stung and twisted. Ooh, don't you ever say I'm
throwing the Lakers. Here's what I'll say about the Lakers. I definitely like their trade deadline better after the deal today that sent Thomas Bryant to Denver. Thomas Bryant's had a really nice year. It's not about that. It's that they got 3 second-round picks back in that deal, so it started to balance out a little more the overall package. I think they ended up sending out that first-round pick and I think 2 seconds total, two or three, once it was all said and done. Now, the guys they got are all backups to me. I mean, you could argue about D'Angelo Russell. Russell,
if he's a backup, he's like a sixth man of the year candidate.
He's a low end starting point guard, and the rest of the guys are all backups.
But he doesn't have to play point guard for the Lakers. I'll say that.
I understand.
He's a secondary ball handler and scorer for the Lakers.
I understand. What have we said all year? They haven't surrounded LeBron with shooting, right? D'Angelo Russell's having a great catch and shoot season. Malik Beasley's a really good volume shooter, at least. Even if he's not going to shoot a great percentage, he can at least bomb away. They don't have anybody that can do that. That will help. But
Westbrook isn't going to be there.
I mean, listen, that is addition by subtraction for sure. Yeah. I still think the problem for me looking at this going
forward. Is he still the sixth man of the year favorite?
One of the most ridiculous things that, oh my God.
I was asked so many times over the past month, Russell Westbrook going to win sixth man of the year? I just kept saying, no, it's not going to happen.
He was a favorite last I looked.
Oh my God.
It was so bad.
A lot of money was wasted on that. That being said, I think, if you look at the Lakers roster, I still am not sure they're one of the eight best teams in the West, and they've expended a decent amount of assets to slightly to moderately improve. And now they're that much more limited on what they could do in the future.
They're limited because they gave up the first round pick, but they didn't give up both. I give them credit for improving the roster now without giving up both of those things. And then they have flexibility going into the summer because look, D'Angelo Russell's in the last year of his deal. Now, maybe they end up paying him and he stays, but they have flexibility there. Malik Beasley has a team option that, hey, if they need, and you know, he's 16 million is not a bad number for him. I think it's 16 and a half maybe next year. But again, if they need, basically what I'm saying is this, if Kyrie says, hey, I want to come, they can make it happen. They can. And so this, as opposed to if they'd have taken out, and I could argue Conley would be a better fit for the Lakers this year, but Conley is guaranteed 14 mil and change next year. And if you keep him, it's 24, you know, but so this deal gives them more, it keeps the Kyrie hopes alive. But if it's the Kyrie thing, then you are gutting your depth again, because
by the way, I do think they have a top eight roster in the West.
Top eight? Whoop-dee-damn.
I'm not saying it's top four.
Well,
they got LeBron James and Anthony Davis.
Cool. I think right now they've got a top 13 team in the West.
Well, that's true. That's the issue. I told
our buddy Dave today, I said, hey man, the moves they made, they're good enough to get you back to being Mac 10 seed again. Oh no, I was doing so well. My lighting just went out. We burned it out, baby.
For the listeners at home, our poor guy McMahon, he's now traveling all the time with the Kyrie show. He's trying to do TV by himself. He's struggling with the tripod. It's a real struggle for our guy.
He had to leave like in a whim to come on this road trip, this 3-game trip. And he didn't bring his microphone. So we had to like,
when did he deliver me one? Look at this
bad
boy.
Well, now you've unplugged it. Now you've unplugged it, Pally. Come on.
Wait, I did? No, it's plugged in, right?
It was. It was not. Now it is again.
Look, this thing. My home mic, I've lost the little stand to it.
I got a stand. Again,
right, okay, we're an audio down, podcast, and you're leaving the microphone down. Away from me.
We're about to wrap up here.
Why?
I was about to make a point that Bontemps could use against me for the next 3 months.
Do it then.
Like that.
Take control. Be LeBron. Lakers, take control.
about the Lakers actually having a roster that is, you know, top eight-ish, I don't know, whatever.
I mean, you just declared it was top eight. Now you're already running away from it. You know what's happening, man? He's running away.
Whatever. they do have LeBron James and Anthony Davis last time I checked. So
let me ask you this one real quick. So Minnesota was the other team involved in that trade. Obviously, the Jazz, part of the benefit of that trade is the Jazz will sink to a solid spot in the middle of the lottery at this point.
That's
Minnesota
right.
Right now is 3.5 games above the Lakers in the standings. Who finishes the regular season with a higher seed?
Minnesota.
Wendy?
Oh, they're getting Karl Towns back, you know, soon.
Well, I know, but you were just declared that the Lakers were about to soar up to like fourth in the standings.
Well, I know. Well, they had to play with Russell Westbrook for 50 games.
Can I tell you
that doesn't go away?
Mike Conley Jr. is going to help the Timberwolves. Oh,
so much.
Like Gobert, Gobert is ecstatic about having him back. Somebody who actually has thrown him lobs, and that's his love language. I think Conley's maturity, wisdom, all that kind of stuff, I think it's going to be really good for Ant Edwards.
Man, you've talked about that openly on the pod, how much it would have helped them to have Mike Conley. You talked about it a bunch. I mean,
I suggested a Conley-Russell swap early in the season, and they didn't let me come to Utah until the middle of the season because I threw it out there.
Guess who else is not coming to Utah? Russ. I was just going to say this Laker thing. First off, I think Rob Pelinka did a good job knocking this team in line. I think he did a bad job putting it together. And I think the Lakers did a bad job allowing Russ to be here for 50 games. They should have got rid of him last summer. Whatever. They didn't. You know, there's 1,000 different things, but I think Rob Pelinka did a good job these last 3 weeks. It may be too late to save this season, but he gave him a chance. But I will say this, very important part of this trade to me is what they do with D'Angelo Russell, because he is at the end of his contract making $30 million. If they extend his contract to something that is not going to be tradable, then this trade will have completely different light from me. I would just ride it out and just have his bird rights and see what happens. But do not make a mistake with that extension. They'll be right I mean, it won't be as bad as Westbrook, but it'll be right back where they were.
You can't make a, you can't do an extension. They can't punt their Kyrie hopes. They can't.
Okay. So don't do it.
Well, then, this also goes back to the conversation we had the other day when we did our radio special after the LeBron game, where even if, like you said, man, if they go get Kyrie or some other star this summer and they use all their cap space, they're right back to having 10, 11, 12 minimum players again. That's not a formula that's probably going to be able to work with aging injured stars on their team, which is what they have now. And if they go this other way, they've got AD and LeBron, yes, but then they've got a bunch of backups and, you know, moderate players that they're then paying money to have surround them on their team. So it's a very difficult spot to dig out of. They definitely have a better roster than they did 3 weeks ago. It cost them a decent amount to get there. And, you know, look, if they are a team that is, looks like they can win a playoff series this year, then, you know, that looks one way. If they don't, they finish 11th in the West, it's going to look a lot different.
Well, the last time I saw the Lakers play at the building formerly known as the Staples Center, I looked up at all those banners and I found a spot for a play-in participation. It real nice right up there.
By the way, speaking of banners, this is the last thing I'm going to say and then we'll go. I am calling for the Cavs, and I'll do this maybe more formally later. And hopefully they will do it. But I sometimes think I feel like I have to advocate for the Cavs to treat things, you know, to history better. I'm advocating for the Cavs to hang a banner for LeBron being the all-time scoring leader.
Yeah.
If it's not a banner, then it's a
wait during something. His career.
Yeah. Now, like next year when he gets there. Yes.
Okay.
I think the Cavs should honor LeBron. I mean, I already think the statue should be there. They should have renamed the street where the parade was, LeBron James Way. I'm advocating that already, but okay, I know that there's a little bit of a awkwardness when he's not there. He played 11 years for the Cavs. That's
more
a Cavs
points
record.
There than anywhere else.
Yeah, that's a Cavs record. Yeah. It happened in a Laker uniform, but it's a Cavs record. So I'm not
and
saying
to hear
that
more about that. You listening to what's the station there, Wendy? Where you? Where 850
WKNR, Cleveland. You go.
Not only is he promoting Howdy Partners, he's promoting your radio appearances, man. We're just promotional machine.
By the
here.
Way, speaking of Howdy Partners, Malika, you know, this is a very powerful podcast that has shaped the NBA coverage within ESPN. I think we can all agree.
I would say it shaped the league as a whole, but
correct.
Let's be humble.
World shaping pod. Forget the league.
They love us
in Europe. I can tell you that.
So, first off, Cavs, do the right thing. The Cavs record, celebrate the Cavs record. That's one. Two, today was the full power of the ESPN NBA coverage in the studio in Los Angeles. Malika makes this big long walk. You know, Woj is on one screen, Bobby Marks is on another. We got Friedel in Atlanta, we got Andrew Lopez in New Orleans, we got Bontemps in studio in Bristol, we got Bobby Marks at the trade machine board. We got like Tristan Thompson at the desk. We got Richard Jefferson. We got Kendrick Perkins. We got Vince Carter. We got Om Young-Masuk. We got Dave McMinnon. We got Ramona Shelburne. Everybody gets shown. Am I forgetting anybody, McMahon? Well, you and I.
All bunch.
And Malika does this. She practiced. I don't think I'm revealing anything. She practiced the big walkthrough like 3 or 4 times. Yeah. It was like almost like a Martin Scorsese continuous shot where they had to like move around everything.
There was a lot going on here and smoothly in high heels. It was impressive stuff.
And there's all these screens and everything, you know, it's a multi-million dollar studio.
We can't get
stuff through
a podcast straight, let alone that. So props to Malika.
Right. But look at the cell phone light now. Looks good, right?
Yeah. If you guys listen, I have no idea the ridiculousness that's going on with McMahon trying to make the lighting work on his ugly mug here a few minutes
that's
ago.
That's a multi-million dollar studio. This is a multi-dollar podcast. And so she comes by and the key moment of the entire introduction is Malika turning to McMahon on national TV in front of a massive audience and McMahon saying,
"Howdy, partners."
I thought it was flubbing the fist pound. I thought it was.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that was my favorite moment. It was right after Wendy left her hanging. She was doing all this smooth little like, you know, woo, 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 woo. And then she had to pause in front of Wendy like, dude, are you going to give me a
fill? And the best part was everybody was locked in then on the Brian mistake. that just set up McMahon to just slide in, get the promotional vehicle going, boom, done.
I didn't get throw it. They had to be quick, so I couldn't mention the hit YouTube show.
No, listen, you got it in. The real ones know, McMahon. The real ones know.
The breaking news is that Malika is smoother than I am.
Just a wee bit.
Just a bit.
All right. Thank you, Listener Collective Podcast. We're Loopy. McMahon, get off to Sacramento. Thank you to Jackson, our producer, who was up all hours of the night, and Bruce, our other producer. We'll talk to you next week, and enjoy your weekend.
Adios, amigos.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.